The Orange FM.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a brand new discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man whose favorite companion is Rory, but he was too embarrassed to admit it, Adam Farmer.
Come on now. Now, honestly, if we want to go there, I was thinking about this, believe it or not, today, and I was thinking how last episode we completely forgot about Craig. Craig from The Lodger, he is possibly one of my favorite companions. Since you went there, I think I'll just throw that one out there.
Well, this begs the question, what makes someone a companion? If they've been on the TARDIS at all, are they a companion, or do they have to be across multiple episodes?
I think the fact that the Doctor in the second episode that Craig was in referred to him as a companion makes him officially a companion in the book.
Okay. I think there should almost be like a hierarchy. Like you're a main companion or you're like a secondary companion. Like I would even probably consider, I guess Rory's probably a main companion. He was in enough episodes. But I would see someone like River as kind of a secondary companion.
Really? You would throw River into the secondary companion book. I don't think I'd ever call her a companion. Now that we're on this topic, I think that she is somewhat of a main character herself. I don't think she's really a companion. She's never companioning with the Doctor. She's always kind of his co-equal.
Hmm. Interesting. Like Rose is a companion, Ricky or Mickey are not companions, right? Agree on that?
I wouldn't say that he's a companion, no. He's okay. A companion of a companion.
Nice. And we're less than a few minutes into the episode and we're completely derailed.
Of course. Hey, you brought up the companions, so it's not my fault this time. I'm throwing that one solely on you. But since we're just rambling here, there, and everywhere, what have you been up to when it comes to the Doctor? Have you, since our last episode, dove into anything else?
Well, obviously, the 50th anniversary is, you know, front and center right now in any Whovian's mind. So I was doing just about everything that they released, you know, that was involved with the 50th anniversary, I've watched. So I've definitely been taking that stuff in. But beyond that, because of the 50th anniversary, I decided to rewatch some old Doctor Who episodes and kind of refamiliarize myself with some of these storylines to see how they tie in with what, you know, all the events of the Day of the Doctor. So I did rewatch The End of Time, just part two. I didn't watch the first part, because I was really curious about the whole Time Lord connection. And
okay.
We can talk about that in a little bit more detail later on. And then I rewatched The Parting of Ways, which is Eccleston's last, you know, episode as the Doctor.
Yep.
And got to rewatch the way that he regenerated, which now that I've rewatched it a few times, I actually kind of like his regeneration, at least what he says before his regeneration, more than I like Tennant.
Really? Really?
I always liked the whole emotional part where Tennant was leaving and kind of like he was showing raw emotion. He was, you know, he was angry at, I forget the old man that locked himself in the radiation chamber, but
Donna's grandpa.
Right. Like he was angry at that guy because he, you know, caused him to die and he was showing raw emotion. And then as he's about to regenerate, he says, I don't want to go. And it's so sad. And I was like, man, that's so meaningful. But when I rewatched Eccleston's regeneration, I liked how lighthearted he was and kind of like he didn't really care. He was just like, hey, this just happens. You know, it kind of shows a little bit different side of the Doctor, a much more confident side in, you know, being willing to see what was coming next. And I liked his line to Rose as he was leaving. I thought it was, you know, very, very cool.
And I'm not going to see you again. Not like this. Not with this daft old face. before I go...
Don't say that.
Rose. Before I go, I just want to tell you, you were fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And you know what? So was I.
Yeah, that's always one of those fun lines. I'm really interested now that we're talking about regenerations. I'm really interested because we've seen, you just brought up Eccleston, you brought up Tennant. We've seen the Eighth Doctor regeneration just within the past few weeks, and then we've seen John Hurt's regeneration seemingly at the end of the 50th, and we are a couple weeks away from seeing Matt Smith's regeneration. It's going to be really interesting to see all those kind of compared side by side as to which regeneration is actually best. But, well, that's cool that you watch those. The more I watch of Eccleston, the more that I don't know, I really like how he approached the Doctor.
Yeah, and of course, I had a lot of free time on my hands because I was on vacation last week. So
nice.
I decided to go back and actually watch some classic Doctor stuff too. So I actually went and onto Netflix and watched the Seventh Doctor storyline, The Curse of Fenric. I was very curious to see more of the Seventh Doctor. I haven't really watched his stuff before. So that actually falls in, it was released in 1989. So it would be episodes 8 through 11 of season 26 of Doctor Who.
Wow.
But it was interesting. I thought I was going to kind of watch it more with the idea of making fun of how cheesy and old it was. But I found myself really engaged in the story, and it was kind of like one of the more scary and creepy episodes of Doctor Who that I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, it was about these, like, you know, I won't spoil the whole thing for you, but there's basically these like creatures that come out of the water, and they're kind of vampires slash zombies. So it's like two bad things combined. But nice. Yeah, so that was kind of cool. I actually really enjoyed it. It made me want to go back and watch some more classic stuff. But there was a couple things that happened in it that I thought were funny, just because, you know, as a Doctor Who fan, you're always trying to tie everything in. You know, everything
right.
you see, you think, oh, this connects with something else.
Right.
So there was a, he said there was something where they referred to the wolves of Fenric, which I was like, wow, wolves, you know, it's like it's tying into the whole bad wolf thing. Obviously, it's not, because, you know, that's a concept that didn't come up until 2005. But it's fun. It's fun to just make up connections that don't actually exist. There was another thing where they showed a list of names, and on the list was the name Clara and another name Martha, and I was like, oh, look, the companions, you know, like they're connected, it's all connected.
Nice.
So, but it's not really, but I like to think that it is.
I was really impressed though with the 50th, once again referencing what just happened, all the different tie-ins that they definitely had there. There were even some things that As I was watching it again, where they'll just mention it going through, and I know that that has to refer to something, and now it's just my job to figure out what in the world that's referring to, because I'm sure that there is more out there, in that 50th. But yeah, all those timey wimey wibbly wobbly connections that they throw in throughout the Doctor Who universe, I'm sure Moffat is probably, at least what he's shown, a master of doing just that.
Yeah, and then the last thing I'll talk about is I actually did, because I had so much free time on my hand, and I had a 12-hour drive both ways to where I was traveling, I decided to listen to some of the Eighth Doctor audio stories.
Well done.
We had actually somebody who listened to the show actually sent me a message and offered to send me some of the Eighth Doctor audio stuff so we could listen to it. So he did send me some stories, and I listened to the first three. They were titled Storm Warning, Sword of Orion, and the Stones of Venice. So
nice.
Pretty cool. It was kind of like listening to, you know, the beginning of a Doctor, you know, the season one of the Eighth Doctor, basically is how it felt. You know, Storm Warning was a story where he basically meets his companion, similar to how Eccleston meets Rose, you know, in kind of this situation, this dangerous situation, and then he ends up having to protect her, and then she becomes his companion. Whose name is Charlie, which, you know, they did reference in the Night of the Doctor minisode.
Right.
So that was kind of cool to see who Charlie was. So yeah, it was cool. All three stories were, you know, pretty good. They weren't the greatest Doctor Who stories ever, but it was just audio. So considering that you didn't have the visual side of it, they kept me entertained. So I would definitely recommend checking them out if you ever get a chance.
Yeah, I've definitely looked into some audiobooks when it comes to the Doctor. It's just a matter of, once again, like we mentioned last time, knowing the best place to start, where to jump into it, and really how to make it worth your time.
Yeah, I'm and sure. These are, because I think last episode we were kind of referring to them incorrectly as audiobooks, but they're actually audio dramas where each part is actually a different voice, you know, a different voice actor
awesome.
Is playing each part. So it's not just, you know, a book that, you know, is an audiobook or anything. It's an actual, you know, production of, you know, voice actors and sound effects, and it's actually very well made. So I'm really looking forward to kind of catching the rest of them. I don't know how many stories are out there. I think there's quite a few for the Eighth Doctor, but yeah. I kind of feel like this is the Doctor that I missed. It's like, oh wow, this guy is actually like a really cool, you know, Doctor, a completely different personality than any Doctor that we've gotten so far. But you can definitely see hints of, you know, Eccleston, especially in this Doctor. You can see how he was the, you know, the one who, well, I guess used to have regenerated into Eccleston, but I guess that's changed. But, you know, it makes sense.
Right.
The personalities are similar. Have you been, you know, diving into Doctor Who?
Yeah, anymore? Because I wasn't going to be able to go to the theater, which I kind of caved within the last 2 days before everything was released, and I jumped online and I looked everywhere to see if I could find any tickets. But by that point in time, by the time I finally caved in and said I was going to go to the theater to watch it, it was already too late. But by that point in time, I had already bought the iTunes season pass for the 50th anniversary, which came chock full of all sorts of wonderful little 25-minute clips. So I jumped in. I watched a couple things that they had called The Ninth Doctor Revisited, which basically just goes through Eccleston's stint as the Doctor, kind of gives you a overview of his personality, things that he did, his companion that he had. Just really, it's actually really, really cool how they did it. And then they had one for Tennant as well. So I watched that. And then I also had the Doctor Who Explained, which they kind of couched as being, hey, if you are new to Doctor Who, if you want to really know what Doctor Who is about, this is what you should be watching. So I actually sat on the couch, turned it on, and had my wife come and sit with me, who claims that she likes Doctor Who. It's definitely growing on her, but there's still a lot of questions every time she watches it. So I figured, hey, Doctor Who Explained, definitely the place to go for her. So we watched all of that. And that too was a really, really cool, short little 25-minute picture of who the Doctor is, where he came from, where he's going. After the 50th anniversary, they came out with the 11th Doctor Revisited, which I haven't looked at yet. And then I jumped into two episodes with my wife. One called Tooth and Claw, where the whole werewolf saga of Dave Tennant and Rose, Billy Piper showing up, and the werewolf, who's not really a werewolf, rampaging through the castle and getting people, and there's a whole mistletoe and all sorts of other stuff. And then Love and Monster.
One of these times I wanted to actually be a werewolf, or actually be a vampire, or actually be, you know, whatever. It's always an alien in disguise.
See, I kind of like that, though. I kind of like how they take that, which completely, completely different than my personality. I like how they take the supernatural and they just kind of boil it down to science, to aliens, to something like that.
Yeah, it wouldn't be Doctor Who if they didn't do that, but it seems to be a common thing that they come back to. Even in the Eighth Doctor audio dramas that I was listening to in the third episode, spoiler alert, the Stones of Venice, the deity that's in that turns out to be an alien. So, you know, that's a very common thing that Doctor Who comes back to a lot.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't know, the more that you just kind of look around at some of the other franchises, be it the Marvel Universe, they do the exact same thing, kind of throwing my other love out there as well. But yeah, it seems very common. I also watched Love and Monsters, which is that Linda London Investigative in Detective Agency, which I still think is one of the best acronyms ever, where the group of people who come together and then the Azorbaloff, which they all decide to, or which he decides to call him, watched that with my wife, and she was just completely turned off by that monster.
I was gonna say, why would you watch that with your wife? You're trying to get her into Doctor Who. That is not one of the kind of like jump on episodes.
Because I just think it's absolutely hilarious. The guy videotaping him the entire time, and the electric lights orchestra in the background. There's something about that that I just love. That episode.
Isn't that the one where it ends, where like the person becomes like a paver or something? I mean...
Yep, she becomes a street tile, and yes, keeps her forever.
Well, I think Tooth and Claw was a good choice. I think that's one of my favorites, and actually, that's one I like to recommend to people. You know, if they haven't really seen a lot of Doctor Who, but Love and Monsters, not so much.
Hey, I tried. I tried to find something a little bit more lighthearted, something a little bit goofier. And then in the end, I ended up paying for it anyways, because I completely forgot how disgusting the Azorbaloff is as he's running through the streets trying to catch the guy. And then I actually purchased an Eighth Doctor vinyl figurine, which is kind of comical, but he's now joined all the other figurines that I have sitting on my desk. So
explain what vinyl figurine did you buy? Is it like a kind of like a weird representation of the Doctor? Does it actually look like him?
It's definitely a miniature replication of the Doctor. So it's picture a Mighty Mug, which for you know what those are. For everybody else, go ahead and Google search a Mighty Mug. Look at a mini Mighty Mug, one of the smaller versions of it, and it's kind of like that, but instead of just being completely rounded, he has some bigger features, but yet still, I don't know, you can definitely tell who it is. I'll have to take a picture of it and send it to you so you know what I'm talking about, but it's a pretty cool little figure. It's one of those ones where they get you, where it's like, hey, just buy a box and it's going to be a surprise of who you get. So I had my list of ones that I actually wanted to see when I opened the box, and sure enough, I ended up pulling out the Eighth Doctor, which I was completely fine with. So I'm very tempted to go back and just buy 12 boxes and see if I could luck out and get one of each.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. what brand is this? I'm very curious, just because they sound like something that I want to put on my Christmas list.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you the brand. It's a BBC branded box, and honestly, I picked it up from Barnes & Noble because it was the night of the 50th anniversary. We went there to buy a Christmas present, and walking in the door, they had a massive table set up that had t-shirts and TARDIS cookie jars and Cybermen ceramic heads and coffee mugs and all sorts of other stuff. So I just picked up, believe it or not, the cheapest thing I could find off the table that I could justify spending money on with my family standing there with me, and I ended up with the Eighth Doctor.
Nice. Good pull, though. That's good. That's a good first one to get, I think.
Yeah, I figure with how impressed I was with him of the mini episode, that I had no complaints when I pulled him out of the box.
All right, well, that's cool. It seems like both of us are kind of diving headfirst into Doctor Who right now. I would say prompted by the fact that we started a podcast about Doctor Who. But, you know, I think it's cool that we're both diving headfirst into this stuff and really trying to round out our knowledge of the Doctor.
Absolutely.
So we can feel like we're actually qualified to have a podcast.
You are correct.
But so before we move on to a couple of news items, before we move on to that, though, I kind of had an idea, because right now the plan for our show really is to kind of review the new episodes as they come out. But as you know, there's large spaces of time that we have to wait until new seasons come out. You know, once the Christmas special is done, I don't think we're going to get any more Doctor Who until something like August, right?
We are going to definitely go through the Doctor Who doldrums that they always spring on us. I never understand how their seasons work. I don't understand the massive breaks between episodes. I mean, it honestly makes me want more, but I really wish they would just give us stuff sooner.
Yeah, so we're going to have, I guess you could call it, a dark time of waiting for new Doctor Who. So we're going to have to fill that with something other than just the small amounts of news that will probably be trickling out in those weeks. So what the plan is to actually go back and review some older episodes of Doctor Who. And I was thinking it would be kind of cool not just to go back to the beginning of Eccleston, but maybe, because me and Adam both have Netflix, and I know a lot of people have Netflix, we could actually go back and start with the classic Doctors, Not every episode of The Classic Doctors is available on Netflix, which is probably a good thing because I don't think we have time to go through all of that. But they do have select episodes from almost every one of the Doctors. The only ones they don't have is the sixth Doctor, Colin Baker.
Okay.
There's no episodes of him on Netflix. Apparently, he's kind of the least favorite of the Doctors, from what I hear. I haven't really seen anything with him in it, but I would like to. But I hear that he's kind of the general least favorite across the board. If anybody out there, if your favorite Doctor is the sixth Doctor, shoot us an email. Let us know. I'd love to hear from you. But yeah, so I guess the plan is we'd love to hear from you. If you think this is something you'd be interested in hearing us go back and review some of these classic episodes, let us know. Or if not, if you think, hey, I have no interest in that, I only want to hear stuff about the newer Doctors, you know, send us an email as well. We will definitely take your opinion into consideration before we go back and review these things. But that's kind of the plan for now, but obviously things can change. So let's move on into the news, though, Adam. Anything interesting come out other than 50th anniversary related stuff?
The poster that they posted of the upcoming Christmas special, that is definitely an interesting picture to look at. There is so much going on in the picture. It definitely has me wondering what the Christmas special has in store.
Yeah, let's talk about it a little bit. You know, what is in that image? And let's start off with, I'm looking at the image right now. Do you have it up?
I have it memorized.
You have it memorized. Okay, even better. Photographic memory.
It's in my head.
So we have basically the Doctor standing in the forefront of the image, holding the head, or the severed head, I'll say, of a Cyberman.
Right. And it's one of those things that when you look at it, there's the aspects of it that jump right off the page to you right away. One of those being the Cyberman head. And it's like, oh, look, we're going to have Cybermen come the Christmas special. But from the looks of it, it doesn't look like they last very long.
Right. And yeah, they may not play a major part, but it's interesting. I thought, and I don't know how good your photographic memory is. I'm going to test it here.
Go for it.
The Cyberman's face, the way that he's damaged, it almost looks like he's smiling.
Yeah.
Did you notice that at all?
I wouldn't say that when I looked at him, the first thing I noticed was a smile.
They usually have kind of that straight across mouth, you know, without any expression, obviously, because they're made out of metal. But this one is damaged, has some battle damage, and the one side of his mouth is very damaged, and it kind of gives him almost this smirk, you know, on the side. And I was wondering if that's intentional or if that's just my mind, you know, picking things out.
Now I'm gonna have to. I'm hurrying around looking for my phone so I can bring it up. But I'll definitely have to take a look at that now. You have me wondering if it really is a smile. I know that there's definite damage on the Cyberman blue, which I found slightly unusual, but.
And the Doctor's kind of wearing a little bit of a different outfit, it looks like, than even what he's had on. I know he changed his outfit in the last season, and now this even looks different. His pants are completely different. It looks like he's got a different jacket, like some kind of a
fleece collar.
Yeah, it's very different than. So it's kind of interesting that they decided to give him a new outfit just for this one episode right before he regenerates. But I guess that's good for cosplayers. You have now three options of how to dress up as the 11th Doctor. So,
and that's exactly what they were thinking of when they did this. They thought, you know what, we're running short on Khan outfits. We need to go ahead and throw in a third outfit for someone else to choose from. After 11 Doctors that people can choose from, we need one more outfit out there.
I miss his original outfit. I thought his original outfit was really cool with the bow tie and the tweed jacket and the skinny pants. Like I thought he looked trendy. He looked hip. These later outfits that he's had, it kind of makes him look a little old.
See, I think for the first time in the 50th episode, I looked at the outfit he was wearing and I thought, you know what? That's a really cool coat. Mm-hmm. It might've just been the fact that he was standing next to a 10-inch skinny coat. I don't know, but there was something about it that was just very classy. But here we are talking about Doctor Who outfits again. Hey, let's move on.
We have a Doctor Who podcast, so I mean, we're that nerdy. But so yeah, we'll move on. We have the Silence standing in the background. Do you think they're going to play a part? Or
I sure hope so, because I was slightly disappointed by how they played out. They had me really on the edge of my seat. when they first arrived with everybody running around, blinking light on their hand, marking stuff, never having a clue what was going on. And then they just kind of like fizzled out. They kind of disappeared. And I thought, oh, wow, that was for someone who, for a villain that had me almost on the edge of how I was with the Weeping Angels, to just have them float away like that, I was kind of depressed. But I don't know, if they come back and if they've been around the entire time and we just haven't known about it, I think they could totally redeem themselves.
And then we have the, it looks like a Weeping Angel under the snow with the arms sticking out. I guess we can kind of assume that that's a Weeping Angel based on the position of the hands kind of clawing out the way that their hands do.
Yep, that was one of those things that initially jumped out at me. Why were their hands jutting up from the snow? But yeah, I would definitely say that those are the Weeping Angels.
So we have Cyberman head, we have Silence in the background, we have Weeping Angel under the snow. No Daleks, it looks like.
They had their day in the sun with the 50th, so yeah, that's fine by me.
We're getting kind of the who's who of Doctor Who, I guess 11th Doctor adversaries more so than other Doctors, but no Daleks. Although in that teaser that they showed, I feel like they might have showed a Dalek. I don't know. I can't remember for sure, but there was that short teaser. Did you catch that?
It was like a 10-second clip.
Yeah.
Maybe 15 seconds. Yeah, I don't remember seeing a Dalek there.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if there was one or not. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. I see Daleks everywhere.
I think it's just the silence.
Anything else in the image stick out to you?
Obviously the things about Clara with the whole paper crown and the Christmas gift that she's holding in her hand, or the Christmas package. And I know that just from some things that I've looked at, that there's definitely some stuff that people are pointing out about the background that really interesting when you start looking a little bit closer at everything that's chocked full in there. It actually makes me want to go back through and look even harder to see some other connections that I can make.
So these other things that you have heard about, is this spoilery kind of stuff? Is it?
Not really spoilery type of stuff. More drawing correlations. Well, it's definitely there. So if you're paying attention to the picture, it's not a spoiler because you're looking at it. They put it right out there for everybody to see as long as you're paying attention. So,
because okay. I had heard, I know there's apparently some of the story elements have leaked, which we all know BBC is not very good about keeping secrets about future Doctor Who episodes. But I've heard that there's some big spoiler out there. I've been able to avoid it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to know about it. But apparently there's something in this image that's supposed to kind of hint at the spoiler that's already been circulating. So I don't know what it is. I don't want to know what it is, I guess. But I'm trying to stay away from those things.
Yeah,
I would to be surprised. I have, with the Doctor Who specials, especially with the whole thing with McGann coming back, was a huge surprise to me. You know, I have no idea what's happening in the Christmas special, and I really want to be surprised because this is a huge event, you know, as, you know, kind of a newer Doctor Who fan, and I know you are too. We've only ever seen one, or I guess we've seen two of the main Doctors regenerate, you know, over the past, you know, between 2005 and 2013.
Right.
So that's a lot of time has passed, and we've only seen two regenerations. So this is a pretty big deal, and you know, it'll be very, I really am curious how they're going to off the 11th. How is he going to bite the bullet?
Yeah, I have no idea. It's one of those things where it's like you, for some reason, I get the sense, well, I had the sense with Tennant as well, that it can't happen, that there's no way possible it can happen. And then to watch the way that Tennant went out, it's like, okay, that I can believe that's how it would happen. But with Smith, I have no idea how they're going to do it. Nothing makes sense. He's practically invisible with everything he's gone through, standing on the Pandorica and yelling out to everybody. That's you can't get him. So I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah. And I'm kind of wondering, because it seems like a lot of the regenerations either that I watched or that I've read about from the other Doctors seem to happen because of some sort of like internal injury to the Doctor, be it radiation or whatever. Very rarely is it violent. And I think the only one that I know of, now I'm not versed in every single doctor's regeneration. I've actually kind of tried not to know about all of them just because I kind of want to be surprised when I get to the point, to those points in those stories. But I will say, you know, this is a seventh doctor spoiler. If anybody doesn't want to hear it, you can fast forward like 20
la,
seconds.
La, 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 la.
Fast forward like 20 seconds. But, you know, the seventh doctor does meet a violent end. He basically gets gunned down by a gang in the Doctor Who movie. So that's the only one I know of that had kind of a violent end.
Huh.
But I would be curious to see if Smith, you know, has a similar kind of ending as Eccleston and Tennant, where they both kind of had these, you know, radiation poisoning or, you know, time vortex overload or whatever you want to call it that happened to Eccleston. Or if they're going to go something a little bit more violent with him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I mean, hey, if they want to do it in a violent way, setting it up with all the villains that it looks like they're bringing back for the 50th anniversary, the Christmas special, it definitely looks like it has a good potential.
Yep, I'm excited. I'm really excited. It's only a few weeks away, and it kind of feels like we're getting spoiled right now. We had, you know, the 50th anniversary, and then just a month later, we get the big Christmas special with the regeneration into the new doctor. So,
yep. And
then they're going to cut us off, you know, for months after that, and we're all going to be, you know.
Exactly, and I have no idea what I'm going to do.
We'll have to watch, like, Arrow or something or some other show.
We'll start another podcast up in the meantime.
Right. So, all right. Well, was there any other news items out there?
I mean, there was a pretty interesting interview that Moffat had about the 50th anniversary. Not too much stuff thrown in there. Just really a lot of questions as to why he went the direction that he did. With certain things about the 50th anniversary, things that I'm sure we're going to talk about once we get to that part of our discussion. But one of the big things that kind of stuck out to me was just what he mentioned about why he used Billy Piper the way that he used Billy Piper, as not really as Rose, but more as Bad Wolf. It was just really interesting just to see him say that essentially he didn't want to mess with Rose's story. He thought that the way that it ended with all the things that she went through, with all the things that she was involved in, it ended exactly how he wanted it to end. And he didn't want to throw any other curveballs in there. And that I completely respect, to have someone, Moffat of all people, who had the ability to take it wherever he wanted to go with it, to have him sit back and say, no, that part of the story I don't want to mess with. I loved it. I had no problems, which I'm sure we'll talk about. I had no problems with what they did with that. So that was really cool just to have him answer that question that I had in my mind, why he went that way. Why didn't Rose Tyler show up? And then basically have him say, hey, we just loved how everything went. So that's the way that we were going to leave it.
Yeah, I agree with the way he did it. It was a good way to have her participate in the 50th anniversary without trotting over the story that had come before.
Exactly.
So I think it worked well. A little forced, maybe, but it worked.
I see. It just was perfect to me. I thought the part was perfect. I thought she played it perfectly, because it was very much Bad Wolf. It was very much that's who she was, and that moment, the moment, played it perfectly.
I like the drop in the moment. That's nice. Nice connection there.
Boom.
Smart man.
I'm the clever one, you're the potato one.
I try. I get it every once in a while.
So, all right, so we won't dig too much deeper into that interview, but let's just jump right into the 50th anniversary.
Yes, please.
We'll talk a little bit about, first of all, let's talk about how it kind of kicked butt at the box office.
And it did.
Made a ton of money, and now it makes me wonder. I was telling my wife as we were leaving the 3D showing that we went to, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about the 3D showing because it was amazing. But as we were leaving, I said to my wife, because the theater was packed, there was multiple showings of it, every showing was sold out, and when we were leaving the theater, there was just a line outside of the theater of people waiting to see the next showing, you know, just kind of the scene you would have if you're going to like a midnight showing of like any of these major motion pictures like Star Wars or Avengers or something like that. You know, that's the kind of atmosphere it was. And I remember telling my wife, I wonder if this was almost a test run for you know, BBC to kind of say, hey, let's put out the 50th anniversary in theaters, see how well it does, and then let's see if maybe someday we'll make a Doctor Who movie. You know, see if this was kind of a test run.
Oh, man. If that's what it is, they need to get on it now. Because part of me feels like, hey, we're at the peak of this. There's really, it can't get any hotter than what it is. And as awful as it sounds, before all the old doctors, not all of them, because obviously some of them have already passed on, but before the rest of them start to move on, before they fade off into the distance, they need to get something done if that's really what they're trying to do. Because if they could add even more doctors to the mix, it would be uncontrollable.
Well, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but since we're talking about a Doctor Who movie, would you want... Is it important to you that the Doctor Who movie works with the TV show, or would you want kind of a reimagining of the Doctor for the big screen?
No, it has to work with the TV show. It has to be, it cannot be a reboot. It cannot be a fresh start. It has to be in perfect harmony with what has already come and what is yet to come. I think that there's certain things that are slowly starting to work that way. Once again, just throwing out Marvel with what they're doing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and how it just kind of plays off of the movies that are going on. I do not think that if we do get a Doctor Who movie in the future, I don't think it can be a standalone. I think it has to be in perfect harmony with everything else that's taking place.
I agree with you. I think they'd have to, it's almost like they'd have to take some time off of the TV show to do a movie to make it work, I think.
Yeah.
Almost like you would need a brand new doctor, because you're talking about trying to bring in a much larger audience. And if you bring in a doctor that's already had adventures and is kind of in the middle of his story, it would be a lot harder to sell the mass audience on it.
Right.
You almost
right.
need to start with a brand new doctor with a regeneration or whatever, and have them even regenerate at the end, like do a complete story, kind of like they did with the Doctor Who movie for the Eighth Doctor, kind of how that one worked. I could see them trying to do that same thing, but we'll see. That's probably something that's well off into the future, but I was just kind of thinking that that was a possibility of maybe this was a test run just because of how well it was received, and you know, it was amazing
right.
to see. And like, I think, what was the stat that I read? It made like more money. It made more money in one night than the re-release of Wizard of Oz in 3D made its entire run.
That's crazy. That's, yeah. If I'm remembering correctly, I read something where it was the second highest grossing movie on Monday, the Monday that it showed, and it was only beat out by the Hunger Games,
yeah.
Catching Fire, which to me that. I don't know if that means anything to anybody else, but to me, that's huge. Like, yeah, it's a Monday, what have you, but for it to only be second to something like The Hunger Games, that says a lot.
And it's a television show. Like, think of any other television show right now on TV that could do a movie that's not a, you know, it's not even like a standalone movie. I mean, it is in line with the story that has happened before.
Right.
And be that successful.
Yep.
You know, I can't think of any currently running shows, maybe other than something like Breaking Bad or maybe The Walking Dead, that could maybe pull that off, but not many, if any, shows could really pull those kind of numbers. And I think it was the highest rated like simulcast of all time or something like that, they said as well.
So. Nice. I'm sure we could pull out all sorts of stats that only this would apply to.
Right.
But all things being equal, it was the fact that it did what it did is just downright amazing. I know that we are fans first and foremost, but they have a business on their hands. It's crazy what it's becoming.
Yeah. And so I did get a chance to go to the 3D show, and you said you weren't able to make it, right?
That's correct. Don't rub it in.
Well, I won't rub it in too much, but I'm gonna tell you all about it.
So nice.
I went with my wife that Monday night after the the show had already aired. Now, of course, we weren't patient enough to wait for it in the theater, but I think a lot of the people that were there did, just based on the reactions. It seemed like they were watching it for the first time, but we weren't able to wait. So we watched it, you know, when it came out, and then we went and watched it again, which I'm glad, because I think a lot of the stuff, a lot of things I didn't catch until the second time I watched it. But like I was saying before, the atmosphere in there was equivalent to any midnight showing. And I go to quite a few midnight showings. I know you've been to at least one or two with me. Yep. And, you know, the atmosphere at this one was equal to, if not greater than, any other midnight showing I've ever been to, including, you know, any Star Wars movie, Lord of the Rings, Avengers. I've been to them all. This was maybe greater than any of those. Pretty much everybody in the audience was either in costume or wearing some sort of a Doctor Who t-shirt.
That's awesome.
And everybody had sonic screwdrivers. I actually kind of felt like out of place because I didn't do all that stuff. Like I have, you know, I have some Doctor Who costume stuff. I'll admit it. I dress up as the Doctor sometimes for conventions, and I have a sonic screwdriver, and I didn't bring any of that stuff because I was just like, eh, this, you know, I don't know if it's the right place for it.
Right.
Well, I couldn't have been more wrong. It was the exact correct place for it.
That's awesome.
It was a little overwhelming for my wife. She's never actually been to, you know, any event like this before, and she was just like, oh my gosh, these people are so weird.
Oh, like, come on.
And I was like, I was like, babe, this is how it is. This is cool. Like, this That's is not awesome. Weird. This is cool. But yeah, so it was cool. There was a couple of cool moments that happened. There was one moment where as the movie was starting, the projector kind of like messed up. And, you know, you get that crowd reaction as soon as it happens. Everybody's like, oh. And then one guy in the crowd goes, use your sonics.
That's
and he
awesome.
Pulls out his sonic screwdriver and points it at the screen and turns it on. And then everybody else in the audience that had one, I mean, I'm talking at least 100 people, point their sonic screwdrivers at the screen and at the same time light them up. And literally, as soon as they did it, the movie started back up. It
that
was
is
almost
awesome.
Like, and so, like, of course, the reaction after that is everybody just cheers, like, yeah, you know, like they had done it. But it was hilarious, you know, just the timing of it. But yeah, it was a really awesome experience. I really liked it. The energy in the room was amazing. Everybody in there was just big fans, and, you know, laughing at all the right moments, cheering at all the right moments.
Huh.
So I was happy to be a part of it. They had a couple, you know, there was an intro that was special. That they showed on there with a kind of like a funny intro with Tennant and Smith. And then at the end, they showed like a behind the scenes special as well. So it was a good experience. I was glad I'm glad that I seeked out the tickets and went.
Well, that's awesome. That just kind of that night, no lie. I told my wife, I'm like, this is the 50th anniversary. I will have to wait another 50 years. Probably for something like this to happen again. And at that point in time, I'm going to be 77. I cannot believe I'm missing this. And you kind of just reaffirmed the fact that I really wish I would have gotten those tickets. I really wish I could have been there, because that sounds like it was just absolutely an awesome, awesome opportunity.
Yeah. I'm sorry that you missed it, but I wasn't meaning to rub it in, but I did want to share my experience with you. Maybe you can live vicariously through me.
Well, let's pause the recording for a second so I can go wipe my tears and blow my nose.
So, yeah. So now that I've bragged a little bit about my experience at the 3D showing, let's actually talk about the content of the 50th anniversary special. And see, you know, how did we like it? Let's pick it apart. You know, let's really get into the. We have a little bit more time here, so let's get into it and. How'd you feel about it? What'd you think overall? Did you like it?
I loved it. Not even gonna try to recouch it in any other way, but I absolutely loved it. I sat there like a giddy schoolboy watching it from start to finish, laughing with a goofy grin on my face the entire time. One that actually had my wife concerned at certain points in time when she would walk into the room and ask me why I looked the way that I did. And it's just because from start to finish, upon my first watch through, I loved it. I had no issues with it. I think that they did an incredible job of paying homage where homage was due. They did a great job of giving fans just different tidbits here and there. from start to finish, even to the point where at the end Smith mentions Transalore, and Tennant says the comment of, we need to find a different location, I don't want to go. Just different things like that, where, I mean, some people might think that's cheesy, some people might think that's cheapens everything, but to me, I absolutely loved it. It's exactly what I think Doctor Who should be.
That was cheesy.
Oh, come
that
on.
That scene. That was no, cheesy. I'm going to have to say. I mean, hey, I'm with you, Adam. I love this as well. I love this special. I thought it was nearly perfect. Better than I expected. But just like any episode of Doctor Who, there's going to be cheese. And this one, they spread it on thick on a couple moments in this. And that was one of them that I kind of wish they had left out. I had just watched the Adventures in Space and Time special, and they kind of did the homage to that line already. So to see it again in the 50th anniversary, it was a funny joke. You know, the 11th said, oh, he always says that. You know, it was definitely a funny joke. I laughed, but I could have done without it.
Yeah, so. I don't know. It was at that closing moment where you already have all those warm fuzzies, and it's like, they did such a good job. I don't know. For me, just having that at that point, honestly, that's going to be the last time that we see Tennant. Guaranteed. Maybe. I don't think he'll ever show back up, which breaks my heart. But and to have him go out basically the exact same the same way he went out the first time, to me it was great. What did you think? What did you think of Hurt's Doctor? With all the lead up that we had up to it, what did you think of John Hurt as the Doctor?
He was great as the Doctor. I couldn't get over my disappointment that Eccleston was not in it.
He was in it.
Well, he was not in it. But every time that he did something that made me think, oh, Eccleston could have said that line, or Eccleston could have been that, or he could have played that part, I was having a hard time, you know, enjoying watching Hurt, because I kept wishing for, and it was my own fault, you know, I'm wishing for something that wasn't going to happen. But I really think it would have been a perfect way to do the 50th anniversary, to have all three of the modern Doctors together on screen, you know, just with the story that they told. That exact same story could have been told with Eccleston, as opposed to having to create this new, you know, war Doctor. You know, Eccleston could have been that Doctor. So I was sad that he wasn't in it. But that aside, Hurt did a great job. I loved his kind of like old curmudgeon attitude, you know, his, you know, kind of calling out all the stuff about these newer Doctors that a lot of the classic fans always complain about, how silly they can be and how, you know, they're kissing their companions and that kind of stuff. And I think that was kind of cool to see that from that perspective, to kind of, you know, show it from the classic fans perspective, like, hey, the Doctors didn't always used to be these, you know, these young, you know, heartthrobs that they are now.
Yeah, that's I agree. For the most part, I agree. Eccleston, I definitely had those questions in my mind, like, where is he this entire time? It's like, why is he not a part of this? Why is he not in the mix with the rest of them? But I definitely loved John Hurt's take on the Doctor. I definitely loved how he kind of went about it. You could see, I don't know, it was interesting to see, even when they get to the point where they're talking in the Tower of London, and it's like you see them playing off of each other, but you also see all those things about Tennant and more about Smith, where it's like, why are you just so goofy? It's because he's trying to forget. And it's like they really drew that out. And it's like, oh, they're showing us now that the reason why they're as goofy as they are, or the reason why they're not John Hurt's Doctor, the reason why they aren't serious and they don't act the way that the classic Doctors act, is because they had gone through this already. And it's kind of showing, I don't know, that dynamic there. I really loved how they kind of played John Hurt and Smith and Tennant off of each other. I thought it was really well done.
Agreed. So Tennant is back. I know Tennant is both of our favorites, right?
Yes, we
went over this last episode.
Correct. So
we were both happy to see him return. What did you think about his return? Did you think it was a fitting end for him. I guess you kind of already went over that, how much head over heels you were for the episode in general. So I'm thinking you did. I'm thinking you did like his return.
I was sad. I was sad that he looked as old as he did. I don't know what I was expecting, but it's like the first moment I saw him, I'm like, wow, he looks really, really old. But it's been like 5-6 years since he's been on there, right? Something like that. 5 years, probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like the thing is, I agree with you. He looked very old to me, and he's in his 40s, I believe.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. He looks great for his age, but,
nice.
But I had a hard time like reconciling the how much older he looked, because in the right. the series before he never looked that. I mean, it's only been 4 or 5 years and he looks so much younger. I went back and watched his last episode of the series and he looks so much younger.
Right. That's yeah. The cool thing was, is that they gave us that always mysterious what happened between him and the queen. So I thought that was a really cool thing that they threw in there. And I thought he worked really well with Smith. I thought they played off of each other really well. I know that some people had some issues with just how goofy he looked, and they said that he kind of went overboard with how goofy he was. But overall, it was just really exciting to see him in the skinny suit and the sand shoes, if you will.
Yeah, it was definitely Smith's movie, I would say. They definitely didn't give Tennant any kind of a big part to play. They left it in Smith's hand to kind of be the hero. Although I guess kind of one of the things that Clara says, she kind of gives them all a designation, like the warrior, the hero, and then she tells him to be a doctor. She tells Smith to be a doctor. So she calls Hurt warrior. She calls Tennant hero, and then she tells Smith to be a doctor. And then I thought it was kind of funny where she says, we have enough warriors and any idiot can be a hero. And
exactly.
I was like, wow, that's kind of almost like a cheap shot there at Tennant. You know, he's the hero, but she's kind of calling him any idiot can be a hero. So,
yeah, there were a few designations like that where, I mean, you have the whole warrior hero and then there's you be the doctor. But then you even have the whole you have the one who regrets and you have the one who forgets. And it's just, I don't know, all those different designations of the doctor, all the different ways that they kind of explained their personalities throughout it. I thought that was really interesting. But yeah, it does seem like they slighted the 10th there just a wee bit.
Yeah, and I'm sure it wasn't an intentional slight at him, because obviously, you know, they love David Tennant. But I think it just could be interpreted that way.
Yeah, definitely.
So Billy, go ahead.
I was going to ask about the Zygons. If the resurrection of a creature 30 plus years later, how that settled on your Whovian mind.
I think it was fine. It is what Doctor Who is. And it's one of the things about Doctor Who that I don't necessarily love, and it's the really cheesy monsters. I think some of them I've gotten kind of more used to. The Daleks, you know, obviously are one of the cheesiest things you could ever come up with. But some, you know, somehow they work for Doctor Who, because, you know, they are part of the history of Doctor Who, and I'm glad that they didn't change that. The Zygons, they're kind of a one-off. You know, I think they've only ever been in one classic Doctor episode, so it's not like they're this big villain that he constantly faces. So, but I think they worked. They worked for the 50th. They were almost comic relief more than anything else. That storyline that was like the Zygons and UNIT and stuff was so much not important to what the real story was, and that was kind of the retelling of the Time War.
Yeah.
So I think it worked for what they were. They were just a side story. The funny stuff with the whole, you know, being able to change into humans and that kind of thing, it worked for me. It was funny.
I completely agree. It definitely, for all the big deal that was made about the Zygons, it was one of those things where it truly was secondary to what was going on. Yeah, completely agree. They were kind of goofy looking. Really did kind of gross my wife out again.
Every time they like slobbered out of their mouth, I was like, oh, is that necessary?
Yep. It was a classic Doctor Who villain, not of the same breed that the Silence or the Weeping Angels are. But it was, I think they played it well.
They were of no threat to the Doctor.
Right, right. Secondary to what was really going on. The Daleks were really the big villain, even though they really didn't get all that much screen time either, because they were more concerned about Gallifrey and not really the Doctor.
The story was more the Doctor battling his own self, like his own consciousness, and like how he was going to deal with the situation. I think that was really kind of the story. Everything else around it was just filler.
Good call. So at the end, when they're getting ready to push the big red button.
Oh, yes.
And Tennant and Smith come alongside John Hurt and said, "You were a doctor more than all of us. You were a doctor when it was impossible to get it right." And they put their hands on the button and they were getting ready to push it down. I thought, this is the most amazing ending to any Doctor Who episode I have ever seen. Because what took place is still going to take place. It's still this devastating aspect of the Doctor's life. And yet all three of them are banding together and making this decision. But then it changes. How do you feel about the change that took place?
I'm completely with you. At that point in the episode, I was okay with that being the ending. I didn't think it was going to be the ending because of the amount of time I thought we had left. But
nice.
I was okay with it, and I thought, okay, this works. This is a fitting end. It maintains the way things happened, but it changes it just a little bit. But the whole Clara intervention and convincing them not to push the button, I mean, it made sense in the end, but I will have to say that that is one thing about the special that I didn't love, was they took away part of the Doctor that I always liked. And that part was the edgy side of the Doctor, the side of the Doctor that, you know, he did kill all the Time Lords and he did kill all the Daleks. And that was something that, you know, they constantly bring up. It's part of his character. And it's, you know, that knowledge that he can kind of snap, you know, he can be the, you know, badass,
the coming storm,
you know, for lack of a better term. But yeah, it's that dark side that, like, you want all of your heroes to kind of have that.
Right.
And now I feel like they took it away. You know, yeah. It's like, oh, he never did that. He actually, you know, and it makes sense. He wanted to save the children. You know, that's something that the Doctor would do. But I do feel like it has taken a little bit away from the edge of that character.
Do you think that the fact that he can't retain any of that, the fact that John Hurt, when he regenerates to Christopher Eccleston, that he doesn't remember what just took place, does that preserve any of that in your mind, that he still thinks that he killed everybody?
Not really, because he didn't. You know,
right.
You can think you're as cool as you think you are, but you're not if you didn't actually do it. And not that it's cool to kill children, but they never referenced that. It was always kind of right. Like, you know, he killed the Time Lords during a war, so we could have just all assumed that, you know, the kids had been taken off planet or something, you know, like,
right.
They never have referenced the children before, and so now all of a sudden they are referencing it. So yeah, sure, it makes sense that the Doctor wouldn't kill children, but I think it does take away from the story. And I went back and I rewatched The End of Time, like I was saying before, because I wanted to see, you know, because I had remembered the Time Lords were involved in that. So right. I wanted to kind of see how that all went down, to see if it made sense with the story. And I really don't think it does, because Tennant, in that episode, he very much is willing to kill the Time Lords. He doesn't hesitate. It's not like he regrets. You know, it doesn't even look like he's really... And the only reason he's hesitating is because the Master's involved, and he's going back and forth on how he should, you know, if he's supposed to kill the Master, if he's supposed to stop, you know, Rassilon, I think his name is,
right,
from coming through the time lock and all that stuff that was going on. He explains to, what was that guy's name? Wilfred or something?
Yeah. Yep.
Or maybe that's the actor's name, but
I think you're right. I think it is Wilfred.
The old man that's with him, he's kind of like, oh, aren't you happy that the Time Lords are back? Aren't you happy? These are your people. And he's like, no, like, if you knew who the Time Lords were, you would not want them to come back. Like, they need to die. And he's very adamant about it. So to watch that and see how Tennant was basically like, no, there is no way I'm letting these people back. I'm cutting off the connection, and they're all going back to the Time War, and they're all going to die. And then to see Tennant say, oh, that he regretted it, it's, I don't know. It just, it doesn't really fit for me when you watch them right back to back.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the end it was a, I think what they did is what they've always wanted to do with the Doctor. And he always is the clever one that finds a way out and not makes everything better, but puts everything back to how it should be, which is really interesting because then you have Eccleston where he gets so excited in the one episode. I want to call it the empty kid, but the one with the empty child, where he says, just this once, everybody lives.
Everybody lives, Rose. Just this once, everybody lives!
Because he's so used to nobody living. It was really interesting way for the episode to end. I was so ready for it to end with them all pushing the big red button and then putting the pieces together after that. But it was interesting to see how they brought in not only all 12 doctors, but all 13 doctors. What did you think about that, throwing the 13th in there just a wee bit, just to give a little picture of it?
The 12th or the 13th. Wait, what are we numbering? How are we numbering this?
that's a great question, because in the episode they say there's 13 of them here. So I have no idea.
I guess for the purposes of the episode, yes, that he was the 13th doctor. But I think in the numbering system overall, we're still referring to him as the 12th, I believe.
Agreed. We'll stick with that for now. For the purpose of our podcast, Capaldi will be number 12 until we're told otherwise.
Right. Until the BBC or Moffat or somebody specifically designates it differently, we will continue to refer to him as the 12th. But yeah, so that was cool. It was cool to see all the doctors together. Probably a little bit fan service, I guess you could say.
Definitely.
Didn't really make sense to me why they were all there. I was kind of like, wait, So I don't know, but it was cool. I think it was needed. It was a needed fan service. That a lot of the episode was fan service, but I was okay with it. I wasn't like angry that they brought them back. There was a scene where they showed Eccleston where he says, and now for my next trick. And that's like straight up out of the episode that I had just watched, Parting of Ways. So I was like, wait, he just did the same exact thing that he did in that episode. So it was, when you can identify the clip that they used, it kind of takes away from the magic of it.
Yep.
But it was cool to see his face. But speaking of seeing his face, when they regenerated Hurt and they didn't show Eccleston's face, I was kind of disappointed again, the lack of Eccleston in the episode, because I thought that would have been a perfect opportunity, to show his face there during the regeneration and kind of give us fans a little bit more fan service. Not that they weren't giving us enough already.
Yeah. The one thing I did appreciate about that regeneration is the comments about the ears. Because in Eccleston's first episode, he looks in the mirror and he basically flaps his ears and he makes some comment about them. So I thought it was once again, a great little piece of fan service right there to have John Hurt make the comment about his ears, and maybe they would be better next time or something along those lines. I thought that was great.
Yeah, Eccleston definitely wasn't impressed with his regeneration. He wasn't impressed with his own face. He makes comments a few times, even when he's about to regenerate into Tennant. He makes a comment about his, daft face, I think is the word to use. So,
yeah. So at the end, when we have Tom Baker walking back in as the curator and doing a fair bit of foreshadowing of what is to come for the doctor. How did you look at that part? Let me ask this first. Do you think that he was supposed to be the doctor still? That whole exchange was kind of weird, because it's like part of me thought that Matt Smith was kind of caught off guard, that he didn't really know who was going to be there. And then to see Tom Baker, when Tom Baker says, maybe I'm you or you're me or something like that. I thought that was pretty interesting. But how do you think about the future of Doctor Who? Where do you think it's going and how do you feel about it?
Well, first of all, I think it was a great cameo. It was a nice, definitely, especially at the ending, because you think it's all over. And then you think, everything cool that could happen has happened. And then all of a sudden we have this, Clara says, oh, this guy was looking for you. And as soon as she said that, I was thinking, okay, something else. There's another cameo because
I thought it was Capaldi. I thought he was showing up. I thought
really?
We have the 13th right here. I thought that was gonna or the 12th right here. I thought that was gonna happen. But yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so I thought it was gonna be somebody, and as they started to pan around the back of him, and I saw the kind of the white hair and kind of the shape of his head, and I was like, okay, that's Tom Baker. And I was happy that they had him in it because, you know, I'm glad they didn't have every doctor in it. It just wouldn't have made sense to have all of the actual actors at their current right. ages to try to squeeze them all in there. It would have just been way too forced. And it made sense that if you're going to give anybody of the classic doctors a cameo, it's got to be Tom Baker. You know, he is the, you know, if you ask any Doctor Who fan out there, who's your favorite doctor? They're typically going to either say one of the current doctors, Smith or Tennant. But if they ever say a classic doctor, it's always Tom Baker.
Right, right.
You know, and I'm sure there's exceptions. There's people out there who like Davison or, you know, other people as well. But Baker, for the most part, is considered, whenever they do the big polls and stuff like that, who's your favorite doctor? It's almost always Tom Baker. So it made sense that for them to give him a cameo. I thought he played the part great because he played it just like he used to play the doctor as the fourth doctor. Kind of that real quirky, you know, almost can't even understand what he's talking about kind of thing.
Right.
It just worked. And with him playing off Smith, you know, I thought it was really cool that they brought him back. As far as like who he's supposed to be, I think what they were implying is that he is a possible future regeneration of the Doctor. You know, the Doctor revisits some of his old faces, I think is what the line that they used.
Yeah, which was really weird because he said in the coming years that you would be revisiting some of the old faces, some of the favorites.
I never forget a face.
I know you don't. And in years to come, you might find yourself revisiting a few, but just the old favorites, eh?
You were curious about this painting, I think. I acquired it in remarkable circumstances. What do you make of the title?
Which title this too? No more. Gallifrey Falls.
Oh, you see, that's where everybody's wrong.
It's all one title. Gallifrey Falls No More. Now, what would you think that means?
The Gallifrey didn't fall. It worked. It's still out there.
I'm only a humble curator. I'm sure I wouldn't know.
Then where is it?
Where is it indeed?
Yes.
Lost. Shh. Perhaps things do get lost, you know. Now you must excuse me. Oh, you have a lot to do.
Do I? Is that what I'm supposed to do now? Go looking for Gallifrey?
Well, it's entirely up to you. Your choice. I can only tell you what I would do. If I were you... Oh, if I were you... Oh, perhaps I was you, of course. Oh, perhaps you are me. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Or perhaps it doesn't matter either way. Who knows? Who knows?
Right. So I don't think they're going to actually do anything with that beyond that line. I think that's just kind of their way of fitting it into the canon that he could actually be there. I don't think we're going to expect to see the Doctor, you know, after Capaldi start to regenerate into, you know, some of these older actors. I don't think that'll happen. Although I wouldn't be angry if they maybe had him do a regeneration into McGann or Eccleston or somebody like that. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to go forward with it. They're not going to go backwards with any of these actors. I think it was just a convenient way to get him into the special.
Yeah. And so begins the rest of this story search for Gallifrey. Do you think that's really where we're heading, where he's going to spend the rest of the episodes looking through time and space to find the cup of soup, Gallifrey?
I don't know. I think it'll be kind of like a behind the scenes thread throughout the story that they might mention it every once in a while, but I don't think it's going to be the main thrust of the story with Capaldi. I think they'll kind of start out the same way they started with every other doctor, you know, just have him, you know, go through a number of adventures in his first season and, you know, maybe throw some hints here and there, but I don't think it's going to be like the main driving force of the show now is that he's searching for Gallifrey. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think even, I think Moffat in an interview even said as much, that it wasn't going to be the way that it goes.
Okay. Okay.
What do you think? How do you feel about it? You're asking me all these questions. You have to answer them too.
I'm just thinking like the last couple lines of Smith where he's just talking about how I'm heading the direction that everybody heads. I'm taking the long way home. And it basically, and then some other things that have been said by Moffat. I don't know if it was before or after, but essentially how everything was leading up to the 50th anniversary episode, and he's trying to set the stage for what's going to take place for the next 50 years, leading up to the 100th anniversary, if you will. So it's just kind of interesting that at the end, the only thing that we're left with is Gallifrey still exists. They made such a big point of Gallifrey falls no more, and it's still out there and it exists. And then for Smith to say that he's going the long way home, but he's ultimately heading back home. I don't know. It makes me wonder if now that the Doctor knows that he didn't destroy his entire planet, if that's seriously going to be this major thrust throughout the rest of the seasons, the episodes to come. Not that I'm opposed to it. I just thought it was a really interesting way for them to end the 50th by basically saying, hey, it's still out there and Matt Smith wants to head home.
They're going to end it where he's going to go find Gallifrey and then destroy it.
Nice. I don't think that's the direction they're going, but hey.
Maybe. Need the Doctor to be dark.
You need him to bust out his Batman voice.
Yeah. So one thing I found interesting, that each Doctor that was involved in this special, at least the three main ones, not counting the other 10 that had not so much cameos, but the three main Doctors that were part of the story, it was their last, I guess you could say their last episode before their regeneration episode, all three of them, which I thought was interesting.
How so?
So Hurt basically walks into his TARDIS and regenerates right away. So that,
correct.
There's that.
Yep.
Smith's next episode is a Christmas special, which he's going to regenerate in.
Correct.
And Tennant's next episodes would be the End of Time, which is where he regenerates. So it's kind of the end of each of those three Doctors' story.
Huh.
Which I thought was kind of cool and interesting. Anything else that you wanted to talk about? I know you wrote out like 100 notes that you wanted to talk about, but we're running long on time here. So was there anything else you wanted to discuss before we wrap it up for today?
One thing that I don't know, a couple of things that I found interesting.
Okay, go ahead. We'll go a little long.
Number one, stuck between a girl in a box, the story of your life. I thought that was really interesting. Thing that Bad Wolf / the moment / Rose Tyler threw out there.
Speaking of Bad Wolf, though, considering our podcast name is Bad Wolf Radio, and you know, when we named the podcast, people may have wondered, why are they referencing something that hasn't been mentioned for so long? Well, we were very timely, weren't we?
Exactly.
It was one of the biggest plot points in the 50th anniversary special happened to be Bad Wolf, so we're right back in the spotlight.
Every time it mentioned, I thought, there you go. That's exactly what I wanted. The mention of Captain Jack Harkness and his death, or at least one of them, it definitely caused some questions in my mind about Torchwood and what happened with that. I know this is an entirely different episode there, but or an entirely different show there, but I thought that was interesting.
Well, he's in the trouble.
Yes, exactly. So that's why I was wondering at what death they were referring
Which
to.
Which death they were referring to, right?
Yeah. Tennant's mention of, for once in my life, I want to know what comes next. And Matt Smith saying spoilers, keeping in mind that Tennant has already met Riversong.
Spoilers.
In Silence of in the Library. So I thought that was an interesting interchange that took place. Let's see here. Oh, and then the classic line that will forever be used as titles for all sorts of things. Great men are forged in fire. It is the privilege of lesser men to light the flame, no matter the cost. Another great quote that comes from this episode of Doctor Who. And with that, I think that covers all the little random things that I wanted to bring up that I haven't already mentioned.
All right. Because you have a list a lot longer than that, so.
I do, but I think we've touched on each one at some point. Oh, right. No, the last one, Geronimo, Alonzi, and for God's sakes, Gallifrey stands. I think that is an awesome three doctor go right before they throw the switches on their TARDISes.
Although anyways. Gallifrey stands as a exclamation for the doctor is kind of cheesy. Not that Geronimo and Alonzi aren't, but that one just seems a little bit more like, almost too serious. Like,
but the
Gallifrey
fact,
stands.
But for the fact that it was like some old grandpa saying, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, that was funny.
Gallifrey stands. I thought
like,
that was.
Seriously? That's yeah, basically.
So, I thought that was great. Anyways, that is enough. We can let things wrap up.
All right. So, oh, man. And there was one more thing I wanted to talk about. So we'll just call this, if you listeners are tired of listening to us talk about this, you can go ahead and end the episode now, but we're going to do a little bit of bonus content.
We have to apologize because this is the first time we've talked about any of this since we watched it.
Yeah,
so we have a lot to cover.
We haven't seen each other since we watched this, so we haven't even had a chance to talk offline about this. Trenzalore.
Yes.
So the end of the last episode of Doctor Who before this.
Yep.
The Doctor and Clara are like in his own time stream and there's all this stuff. And what happened with all that?
Yeah.
Are we just to assume that they just went about their merry way, or is that going to be kind of tied into the Christmas special?
See, I have absolutely no idea because I want to know why Clara was teaching in a classroom at the very start of this episode. That might be the biggest unanswered question I had from the entire thing. Why was she teaching in a school, and how did they get from his own time stream to her being a teacher at a school?
And the school that she was teaching at was the same school that in the very first episode of Doctor Who back in 1963, that's the school that Susan attended, the first companion, the doctor's granddaughter.
Well, there you go.
And so that was a nice little Easter egg. And they actually had the name of one of the companions. Ian Chesterton is his name. He's the first male companion, I guess you could say, part of the first group of companions of the first doctor. He was listed as the principal of the school on the sign, which I thought was also a cool Easter egg because I've always thought he was a cool companion.
Nice.
And he had a cool name. He has like the coolest name of all companions, Ian Chesterton.
That's awesome.
So, yes. So I hope there's a little bit more explanation as to how they kind of got out of that situation on Trenzalore because it just seemed like they didn't really pick up that story thread.
Yeah, I would be right there with you.
All right, so we will end it with that. Thank you so much, listeners, for checking us out. We know we have a few listeners. We've been following our download numbers, so we know that there's quite a few of you out there have listened to us, so we really appreciate it. We've got a couple of reviews on iTunes, but if you haven't done that yet, we would love for you to go over to iTunes, check us out, Bad Wolf Podcast or Bad Wolf Radio. If you search for us on iTunes, there will be another result that isn't us. So we are the one with the really cool black and white with the bad wolf in white. That's us. So if you want to leave us a 5-star review, that would be awesome. Help us kind of get more recognition out there out in the podcast world so more people can find us. Also, we have a Facebook page if you want to check us out over on Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio. We've had quite a few people come over there and like us, and we've had a lot of interaction with different stuff that we've been posting. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go out there, check us out. We post pretty much any new news that comes out about Doctor Who, video clips that they've released, you know, great fan art, that kind of stuff. We're posting that over on Facebook. We also have a Twitter account if you want to follow us on Twitter. That one, not so much activity over there. So we'd love for you, all of you people that went out and liked us on Facebook, go over to Twitter and follow us as well. We're at Bad Wolf Podcast. Check us out. We'd love to interact with you on Twitter as well.
And we also have an email address if you guys are interested in giving us some feedback, sending us some tips on what you would like us to talk about, maybe something you'd like us to review. Maybe you know of one of the audio dramas that you think we should, or an audio drama that you think I should jump into. I know Aaron's already jumping in some of those. You can go ahead and shoot us an email at badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be checking that and seeing what comes our way.
We will try to get another episode out before Christmas. We're not guaranteed. We definitely will do a Christmas special review episode, but if we find the time, we'll throw another episode out there before that comes around. But thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.
See you later.